This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So take a look at this story. Uma, Chinese education in Malaysia will mark its 200th anniversary next year. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, the first Chinese school in Penang, actually.
Yeah, that's right. That was in 1819, Ng Fuk Thong Temple in Georgetown, Penang. And of course, while the Chinese schooling system has certainly come a long way in the past 200 years, educationists have said that vernacular schools will continue to face challenges, including managing the perceptions of prejudice and opposition.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and this is the biggest problem confronted by Chinese and also to a smaller extent Tamil schools, right? This idea of the national education system, which has kind of sought to fight just for the use of Bahasa Malaysia to teach across the subjects, right? And this is a genuine problem because a lot of the time it is a political tool, and you'll find, and I'm sure over the next half an hour, over the next hour as we're doing this, and we urge you to call us with your thoughts on 777-332-900, a lot of people will use these same old arguments. It's a national language. It's going to unify us. If we have multiple languages in vernacular schools, we're going to drift apart.
Well, I think what's also fascinating about the discussion as to where it is right now, whether it is, whether the language instruction is in Malay or when it comes to vernacular schools, I think with the way technology and jobs are evolving so rapidly in our current environment, I think all of the schooling systems will really need to sit up and have a good, long look at themselves and saying, are we actually responding to the needs of our current environment?
Yeah, and here's the thing, right? I mean, the book by Bakri Musa about an education system worthy of Malaysia, and he makes a very interesting point in that book, which I really quite enjoy, which was, it should be a free market. It should be an open market in education in the sense that there should be Chinese schools, there should be madrasas, there should be Tamil schools and Malay schools and national schools, and everyone should compete to be the best damn school where parents are like, no, I'm going to that one.
Right, because essentially there are going to be some schools, let's say focusing on TVET, that's going to be terrific in the northern part of the country. And when it comes to TVET, if you want to get the kind of certification that you want, you get it from that particular school, and not all of them will reside in the Klang Valley necessarily.
And make no mistake about it, right? We've had a national schooling system, and the national schooling system in this country caters to the lowest common denominator. It dumbs everything down. Yeah. And if we're complaining about the quality of output of our students, there is very good reason why.
Yeah, so we have, I guess, at least in the country, two types of Chinese school. We've got the independent Chinese secondary school, ICSS, using Mandarin as the medium of instruction. And, these schools do not receive federal government funds. The other type of schooling is the national Chinese secondary school that follows the national education syllabus taught in Bahasa Melayu. In this particular instance, they do actually receive government aid. Pupils will take the SPM examination like others in Malay medium secondary schools. For the ICSS, the independent Chinese secondary schools, I think the question there is about the lack of federal funding, which means that these schools are reliant on donations from the community and fees from the pupils. But is that something that can be sustained in the long run as well?
My read on the situation is that vernacular schools aren't going anywhere. I mean, we're going to be speaking to educationalist Kwa Kia Sung in a little bit. And the reason I say that is it's because it's such a political hot topic, right? Mm. In the sense that this Pakatan Harapan government, for example, knows that they are in power on the backs of the Chinese population. And for the Chinese population as well, the Chinese school is a very important institution.
Well, not just that. I think, the schools themselves have positioned themselves to appeal to other demographics beyond the Chinese community as well.
So loads of Malay and Indian parents. And
absolutely. You're seeing more and more of that. And so I'd be curious to see what does the future of this particular scenario actually look like. We have on the line right now Dr. Kwa Kia Sung. He's an advisor to Suara Rakyat Malaysia, or Suara. Dr. Kwa, thank you very much for joining us on the evening edition. So talk to us a little bit more about something that we discussed earlier about the prospects or the future of vernacular schools, given the repeated calls for a single stream education system.
Yeah, I think that the prospects are always good because the Chinese and the Tamil communities and have been defending their mother tongue education for the kids of the Chinese education nearly 200 years. Next year will be the 200th anniversary, And Tamil education has also been a very long one. And so they will fight tooth and nail to keep their system. But it's very sad that after all these years, the government still insists on perpetuating this idea of a single stream education, you know, because in the Chinese and the Tamil schools, Bahasa Malaysia and English are compulsory. You know, they you can't get their certificate unless you get passed in BM and English. So there's really no reason for the government to continually push for this single stream education.
So, Dr. Kuo, education activists like yourself have pointed out in the past that one of the key challenges that vernacular schools face is the lack of resources provided by the government, as well as shortage of teachers. Would you say that the problem has worsened over the years, or has that problem always been there for these schools?
No, resources have always been a problem. But the question is that these communities, including the Malay community, through the years, you know, since colonial times, have always been at pains to upkeep their mother tongue education system. And in fact, during the pre-independence period, because the Chinese education had developed to a greater extent, and we had secondary schools, and we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the first secondary Chinese school in this country. And during the pre-independence time, you find that Lim Lien Giok, who is like the soul of the Malaysian Chinese in this country, was encouraging the BM community in this country, the Malay education lobby in this country, to develop their secondary education. So you can see that during the independence period, there was a camaraderie and a cooperation between the Malay, Chinese, and Tamil education, because during the colonial period, you know, it's only English education that was encouraged.
So I guess the situation has changed a little bit right now, hasn't it, Dr. Kuo? I mean, the main argument against Chinese and Tamil vernacular schools is that it contributes to, I guess, what we perceive or experience as racial segregation, this question about how do we foster unity, because, you know, children are being sent to schools that are essentially differentiated along, I guess, racial lines specifically, and as well as religious lines. Could vernacular schools play a part in the promotion of that national unity?
Well, the fact is that more and more non-Chinese are entering Chinese schools. You know, there's almost 10,000 now, I think, in Chinese primary schools, and hundreds in the Chinese secondary schools. And this fact would hold if it wasn't for the other fact that in many government institutions like Mara schools and a lot of science schools and UITM. And a lot of these, purely Bumiputra establishments, you know, unless these establishments, which have been supported by all Malaysian taxpayers, unless they were open to all Malaysians, there's a hypocrisy to say that the Chinese and the Tamil schools are promoting segregation, because they are open. The Chinese schools are open to Malays and Indians, and like I said, they have grown. They've grown in thousands in the Chinese schools now, and grown in hundreds in the secondary schools. So how could they be segregationist?
Is there a way to improve how we promote unity among school kids while keeping vernacular schools?
The solution, I've always said, must be based on, first of all, elected local governments. That hasn't come about by this new government has also promised in the manifesto to have elected local governments, and they still can't do it. But once you've elected local governments, the elected local councils will decide which schools to build based on the need. So if you were in a Chinese area in PJ or Johor Bahru or Malacca, and that community wants Chinese schools, you build Chinese schools. If you're in around a plantation somewhere or in an area where there are more Tamil people who want Tamil schools, you build Tamil schools. If you're in Kelantan, Perlis, Kedah, and you want Bahasa schools, you build Bahasa. If there are people whose mother tongue is English, such as in PJ or Johor Bahru or Penang, you build English schools. But once you have all these schools, all schools should share precincts. So you share common sports facilities, you share common performance facilities, you share common state-of-the-art IT facilities, so that, you know, there'll be a place for people to interact. When you have shopping malls where where people eat together, there's no reason why we can't eat together in an education precinct, you know.
Right, and do you feel, Dr. Kwan, that the current government is likely to lend greater support specifically to vernacular schools?
I think since the election, the Chinese community has been very disappointed, I think, with what this toing and froing and flip-flopping of the new government over, for example, the recognition of the Unified Examination Certificate. And just after the election, they said that there was no money for the new schools that had been approved by the last government. So these have not gone down very well with the Chinese community and the Tamil community, because using this so-called 1 trillion debt mountain as an excuse for not building schools that had been approved is unfortunately is not good enough. You know, the community is not going to accept that. And when it comes to recognizing the UEC, a lack of financial allocations has got nothing to do with the recognition of the UEC. And the fact that we want to build a high-income society based on adequate skills for industries in this country. And you would think that recognizing the UEC would be a means by which we could train the kind of vocational and technical skills that our workers need. So what we have here that the graduates from the independent schools have no choice but to move away to Singapore, to Taiwan, to China, to UK, to America, you know. And these are the only people who can afford it. The people who can't afford it could easily be absorbed into vocational and technical institutes in this country. So you can see that this is not just a question of what language the system that children go to. It's a question of the kind of skills that our industries need in this country.
Well, Dr. Kwa, thank you very much for being with us on the program and for sharing your perspective with us on vernacular schools. That was Dr. Kwa Kiasung, advisor to SWARAM, also talking about the challenges that vernacular schools have to face. You know, what I found interesting about that is sort of trying to find the opportunities in which spaces can be shared, you know, from folks from different communities, kids from different communities to I guess, fulfill a particular project or initiative. And it might be a more effective way to achieve unity in these neutral spaces rather than, you know, sort of fight for the unity integration aspect through the single stream schools, which has really been, you know, one of the reasons why that's been promoted. Because in the past, there was a successful element to that. And we've seemed to have lost that national integration element.
In the past, the successful element of that was that it was in the English language.
Yeah, that's right.
We've got some messages coming in. I think it's important to consider why Chinese schools are perceived to provide so much better education that English-speaking national school graduates, like my friends and I, are planning to send our kids there or to private schools. Mm-hmm. We've got Yvonne, who writes in to say, perceptions of discrimination. When I moved from Chinese primary to SMK, I was asked to count from 1 to 10 in BM in front of the class on my first day. Teacher congratulated me when I didn't make any mistakes. Why me and not any of my other classmates who were mostly SK? As a 13-year-old, I didn't think much of it, realized the context when I was older. Chinese school students are just as competent in BM. The stereotyping stems from racism. Kevin Yong says, the more types of school, vernacular schools or any schools, the more diverse talent we have, and from there we will have lesser graduate unemployment in the future, because if every student is graduated from the same stream of education, every graduate will be seen the same, hence graduate unemployment will be a problem. Chinese schools are funded by private sector, teachers are sourced by the Chinese community. We are actually a relief to the government in educating kids. We've got Bing, who says, Dr. Kwa, your analogy is a nominal fallacy. Look at the products of vernacular schools. We have graduates who can't sentence Bahasa proficiently, neither English, and what about patriotism? Common language were proven to be a national identity. Look at our sportsmen. None can sentence the national language. This is from Bing. I don't know, Bing. I think that's a bit of a fallacy as well, because there are people in national schools that can barely string a sentence of BM together or in English. I think that's a problem overall with our education system and not just with vernacular schools.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, just even the exposure of, you know, simple things like media training, for example. No, right? Like we've talked about sportsmen
specifically.
Yeah.
Right. And then we've got Anwar, who writes in saying, good morning, Dr. Mansley should do more than deleting his previous Facebook status that now becomes bullets for others to troll him. Isn't Sekolah Wawasan, the same concept of has the same concept of shared facilities. Still, it's not popular among the Chinese community.
We're going to open the phone lines 7733-2900 for talk back. We've got Lim on the line. Hi, Lim.
Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, I'm calling to just talk about this fallacy of Chinese education causing the segregation. You see, everybody just thinking of educate the young, and then voila, when they come out, everything will be very nice. But don't they realize that in the government sector now is all majority Malay? In fact, in my office, there isn't much of a segregation, but there is some difference in the opinion, because when they start to, due to religion reasons, they start to separate different sets of utensils. So that...
Did you say separate different sets of utensils in the workplace? Is that what you're referring to?
Because we had lunch last time.
Oh, I got it. Yeah.
Right.
And I heard that the Chinese and Malays, they do have lunch together last time, had meals together last time. But seems like this environment wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, I understand what you're referring to. I mean, I always think about the office environment. I mean, you've tapped into, I guess, the utilization of utensils as a means in which how we're not integrated in terms of as a community. But there are.
See, the thing is that when I want to wash a dish, they say, "Never mind, just put there. We'll wash it."
Oh, wow. It reminds me of some of my sort of early days of, having sleepover at friends' houses as well. And, just another quick question. What is your position on, the role of schools? I mean, vernacular, international, kebangsaan. What do you think is the most, important need that it needs to fulfill?
The thing is that this Wawasan school, I think Chinese is skeptical is that what food you allow in and not allow in, because it seems like Malays are getting a lot sensitive nowadays about these non-halal things, you see.
I've noticed.
So then the moment you put all three together, what do you really want to create? But when they come out to work, then they see the quotas here, then the boomy discount for housing.
It adds up.
You can't get into the government. Especially the United Examination. You try to promote the mixing of races in Wawasan School, but you do not, recognize this UAE. I think UAE, isn't it? So they can't mix, get into the government service. So how the next
thing
is
going to
be?
Well, Lim, thank you very much for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us. You know what's, I think, really difficult about that particular call was that, we're talking about, how do we fix the education system, right? How do we find the best means to create opportunities for kids to excel in terms of education, but also sort of address this issue of integration and unity? And Lim will paint you a picture of what the vibe is like in an office where there are question marks about who's using what utensils and who's cleaning what. And it's surreal because it's happening in our supermarkets. In some instances, we've had those episodes before. And I don't know.
We actually have been receiving quite a few messages. Here's a message from Eric, who says, vernacular schools have a place in Malaysia, but we need political solutions. One compromise can be for vernacular schools to give greater emphasis to BM and increase interactions with national schools. This may help to soften perceptions of vernacular schools being segregated from mainstream education. Vinayan says, my two boys, now 24 and 29, speak three languages perfectly, never faced any segregation or discrimination, came out well-balanced Malaysians from Tsung Wah up to secondary. They are excellent schools. Vinayan from Cyber Jaya. We also have Arvin, who's writing in saying, the challenge with vernacular schools is that while they are not, at least on paper, designed to segregate, in practice, because of the particular defining difference they have, language, they end up doing exactly that by creating groups of largely mono-ethnic student populations in their formative years. And finally,
salient and valid point.
Yes, yes, very salient and valid point. And finally, Yvonne writes in saying, in regards to Lim, our previous caller, can relate to what Lim said. I eat at majority food truck places often. I am terrified of using my own Tupperware. I feel like an immigrant in my own country. Funny, when it comes to handling money, there are no complaints.
You know, there's a...
There you lie. Have your porky hands been touching my money?
Calm down.
Sorry.
All right. We're going to head to the phone lines, 7733-2900 on top back. Kavi has been patiently waiting on the line. Thank you very much for holding the line, Kavi. Tell us your thoughts on this issue.
Yeah, no worries. So the key thing that I want to just highlight is what the outcome of both sides are. Vernacular schools have very focused outcomes. They're looking for excellence. They're looking for, you know, really about financial literacy and, you know, those kind of things. Whereas the national schools are focused from a government level about just making sure all Malaysians are educated to a threshold and literate and stuff like that. So it's about a lot about appealing to values. If you look at, most parents will know that if you go to like open days in vernacular schools, mm-hmm. you know, the things that they're touting are really about excellence, where the students are going, what is the focus of the school. A lot of Chinese schools focuses on financial literacy being a very key thing because, as we know, that's one of the keys to successes. So there's even science students they take business studies because you need to understand all those kind of things.
Right.
And national schools do not have that focus. In fact, you have them shoving down civic and moral, and those of us who have taken it know that it has nothing to do with morality and so forth. So the parents do not feel like these schools are appealing to their values because it's designed for the common denominator, the lowest denominator at that. The other thing is also infrastructure. Of course, you know that most vernacular schools are privately funded, and because of that, the students have more conscientious mindset. And civil, they're more civil-minded about taking care of the things. You know, some of the Chinese schools have like observatories and stuff like that, and that comes back to the value. You know, economic values really push forward. So it sort of feeds into the empire cycle. I think it's a lot about values and what each type of school is driving. So until that, that key value is not being fulfilled in national schools, you're not going to see people buying into the whole concept of it. We're talking about Malaysia having entrepreneurial schools. Like, we have one of the first entrepreneurial schools in the region.
Right.
It's a private school that's won awards in the U.S. and Cambridge and Hong Kong. But we don't see those sort of things being adapted into the national school system because of a lot of the politics that gets money into it. So yeah, that's kind of my thought of it. So I think they summarize the key thing is you got to appeal to the value of the school to focus on the outcome of what you're creating. Are you creating just literate Malaysians, or are you creating Malaysians for excellence? And do you have the infrastructure to create that excellence?
Right.
Well, Kavi, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. It was getting a little bit choppy on our end in terms of the connection, but what I think, if I were to paraphrase Kavi a little bit more, is that trying to look at what are the values of these respective schools and how sort of that translates to the values of the Malaysian community at large, but also with regards to just different specific communities.
We're also working under an assumption that national schools are welcoming to all. Right.
Yeah,
that's a big assumption to make because, we speak to a lot of educationalists on the Evening Edition and on BFM in general. And I guess the message we've been receiving over the last few years is that there aren't national schools. There are Malay schools, Chinese schools, and Tamil schools. And I think that's a failure on the part of the government to actually make sure that national schools are actually inclusive.
What a task they have. We've got another caller on the line. Vani is on the line. Hi, Vani.
Hi, Ezra. Hi, Uma.
How are you this evening?
Very sad to hear.
Very sad.
Well,
okay, let's talk it out and see if we can improve the mood a little bit.
Yeah,
tell us what you think about sort of this issue of vernacular schools.
Okay, I'm a secondary school teacher, and my children attend vernacular school.
Right.
And I can see the comparison every day. my eldest son was given the option of attending a Sekolah Bestari. But what I found in Sekolah Bestari is there's a lot of polarization. So on the day, the first day that I attended the orientation itself, mm-hmm. it was a clearly lopsided distribution of children who were attending. And to me, growing up in the 80s, I'm an 80s kid, we did not see this kind of polarization in schools at all. So, and with a stark contrast to my son, my older two who are attending vernacular school, more than half the class are non-Chinese. And one great point I'd like to point out, teaching in government schools and actually observing my children performing in vernacular schools, mm-hmm. is that in the government schools ecosystem, religion is given too much priority as part of the ecosystem, which should not be so. So you create a sort of, it does not give knowledge to the child. It kind of puts the child, it's a fear tactic.
Right.
So, it's the religious aspect is infused into every lesson, in every part of the ecosystem, which is not right, because the child should learn religion, whether the child wants to be religious or otherwise, that should also be a choice. But it should be only taught as a subject. Instead, we teach children, I do not want to sound racist at all. That's not my intent. But this is what's happening in government schools. We have Tazkira in the morning. We have Doha to start every
the public and private spheres are blurring itself, and we're not quite sure as to what the net positive outcomes of that. Yeah,
that's right. I'm not saying it's wrong, though. It is right, but confine it to just the subject by itself. So if you infuse, and then there are scare tactics thrown to children who come, girls who come without wearing the tudung, and then there's a scare tactic done by the ustazas and things like that. That is, to my part, it should be under the purview of the parent who sends the child to the school. The school should not have the power to dictate over such matters. Whereas, in my child's school, in my primary going children, they are free to explore whatever friends they want to make friends with. There's no religious lessons. Of course, they are taught moral values, which is important. They mm-hmm. do have the agama class, but otherwise, there is no religious infusion into the lesson, the day-to-day lesson.
Yep, Vani, thank you very much for your thoughts. We've just got another couple of minutes, and we've got another caller on the line. Thank you very much for calling in, Vani. We've got Firdaus on the line. Hi, Firdaus. We've got a couple of minutes. Tell us what you think.
Hello. Okay. Hi, BFM. Okay. I don't want to complain, but I would like to share about my opinion.
Yep, you got 60 seconds. Tell us what you think.
Okay. Instead of we having vernacular and the normal school, why not we just have one school and we learn all the languages in the same school? Just like what happened, Switzerland is practicing.
Yeah, I think that's the ideal situation, right? So that everyone can learn whatever they want.
Yeah, so everyone has that benefit from learning that language. And then we can take an example from our neighbor, Indonesia, so say that they are having two subjects, which is warga negara or pasca negara, something like that. That's how they develop their people to be more patriotic and being respect to other races. Okay? And then that's why when you, I found it when I see Indonesian, they can easily speak their own language, mm-hmm. regardless if you are from any part of Indonesian. Yeah.
Well, Firdaus. Yeah, I think we certainly get your point on that front. Thank you very much for calling in. You know, he sort of references sort of models that we're seeing in Europe, where when it comes to language, everybody is more than just sort of playing lip service to a particular.
They're doing it.
Yeah. Sorry. All right, folks, we've got the 7 o'clock news coming up shortly after this. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition. It's BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.